All right, we're going to go back to our thoughts on the ministry. God has given us a ministry, and I want us to rejoice in that ministry. That's the whole thing about this. I want us to rejoice. I want us to be thankful to God. Sometimes we get discouraged, do we not? We look at ourselves, we look how small we are. But then again, we're reminded in Zechariah, despise not the day of what?
Small things.
Small things. And we're also reminded again that God is able to save. Jonathan said it way back in the Old Testament. God is able to save by the many or the few. It's remarkable, too, if you look at what was transpiring when Jonathan made that statement. It was him and his armor bearer against the Amalekites. How about that?
The giants.
The giants, yeah. But God. My old Lutheran pastor used to have enjoy talking about how that God in one constitutes a majority. And you could really break that down and say just God, right? If you have God, if God be for us, who or what? Who can be against us? So we are small as far as numbers are concerned. But with God, we have been able to accomplish great things. But God, again, prepares. He prepares people. He prepares His people for ministry. You know, it's amazing, again, how over the years, how that we have observed that in Baptist churches, and I'm assuming that that is so in about every other denomination. But in Baptist churches, as soon as someone makes a profession of faith, they want to have them get up and they start, you know, serving God. All of a sudden, I can relate to that. When I was 11 years old, I made a profession of faith and was baptized. And before I was even baptized, I made a profession of faith. And the next night, the very next night during this so-called revival meeting, they had me up on the pulpit, behind the pulpit, trying to preach. What a travesty that was. But, yes, sir.
Brother, I got you beat on that. It was the same night for me.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though.
Everybody, I walked the aisle, and everybody thought something really happened to me.
Yeah.
And they had me there that night trying to lead singing.
Yeah. That's exactly it. And if they don't do it the night, same night or the next night, they're going to do it soon. So, you know, that's the way it goes. But God has to prepare us, doesn't He? And that's what we're kind of getting at here in the first part of this. Eventually, as the Lord leads, we're going to start talking about more specific things that God has done in this ministry or through this ministry. But God has been preparing. He's been preparing. He was preparing me. I make this statement sometimes too. You know, I thought when I announced my call to the ministry, I thought I was already a preacher. But I found out as time went on that He had just called me to be one. Somewhere down the line, I'm still trying to be a preacher of the gospel, a minister of the gospel. And none of us can do that except by the Spirit of God, as He, first of all, teaches us. You can't teach something. It's one of the seven laws of teaching that they've put forth. And it's true, you can't teach somebody something that you don't know. But how many people today are trying to do that in the churches? They're trying to teach that which they have no concept of at all. Consequently, nothing is being accomplished except they're just leading people further and further astray. But in Matthew chapter 28, again, we'll start with those scriptures that are at least well known as far as memory is concerned, but I'm not so sure that they're so well known as far as the real truth of them is concerned. But Matthew 28 verse 19, "Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world." Mark, of course, is the one where it is said, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature." Luke has a little bit different take on it, and John, as far as John is concerned, John doesn't mention the Great Commission per se at all, except that Jesus takes his disciples, and then he meets with his disciples there on the banks of the sea, and he takes Peter in particular. And what does he tell Peter?
"Feed my sheep."
Yeah, "feed my sheep. Feed my lambs and feed my sheep." So, teaching. You know what one of the great qualifications of a bishop is, or an elder or a pastor, whatever you want to call him, is being apt to teach. And that's what he gave some apostles, some prophets. And then most of the time we divide that last one up between two things. And he gave some pastors and teachers. But there is no division in there. If you read that grammatically correct, the pastors and teachers is one and the same thing. Now, it doesn't mean that people can't be teachers and not be pastors. But it does mean that if a man is a pastor, he has to be also a teacher. He has to impart knowledge to those that he is preaching or teaching. And then in Isaiah chapter 51, in verse 1, we find Isaiah saying this, "First and hearken. Hearken to me. Listen to me. Ye that follow after righteousness." Who is he talking to? He's talking to God's people. Isaiah, his commission from God, first and foremost, was what? Well, preach to them. Not to convert them. Right? Again, I've heard that the sixth chapter of Isaiah. Verse 6, "Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a living coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar, and he laid it upon my mouth and said, Lo, this hath touched thy lips, and thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin purged. Also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then said I, Here am I, send me." And he said, go and tell this people, hear ye indeed, but understand what? Not, and see ye indeed, but perceive not. Make the heart of this people fat, and make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and convert and be healed. That was Isaiah's message. And Isaiah says, then, Lord, how long? And he answered, until the cities be wasted without inhabited, and the houses without man, and the land be utterly desolate, and the Lord have removed men far away, and there be a great forsaking in the midst of the land. Now, boy, how would you be looked down upon today if that was your message? And yet, that is our message. For the most part, this has been our message. But thank God, there is that last verse, but yet in it shall be a tenth, and it shall return and shall be eaten, as a teal tree is an oak whose substance is in them when they cast their leaves, so the holy seed, right, shall be the substance thereof. And besides that, of course, we believe, or I believe, that God is going through the last of the three phases, if you will, of His going into all the earth, indeed, and taking out a people to the praise of His name from every, what? Nation and tongue and tribe. We're seeing that happen, and we have been blessed to be a part of that. God has blessed. So hearken to me, ye that follow after righteousness, ye that seek the Lord. But what are we to do? Look under the rock whence ye are hewn, and to the hole of the pit from whence ye are digged. Now, again, I want us to look to that rock. That's the one that JT's been talking about, that cornerstone. I want us to look to Him, because it's in Him that everything is and is accomplished. By Him, by Him, by Him. Nothing is accomplished by us except as God is pleased to work through us, or to share, if you will, His glory with us. He has been pleased. It is a privilege that God has given to us, that we might bear witness to His name. The fourth chapter, I go back to the fourth chapter of John. And we'll not go over there, but you can read that, where he simply tells that you have entered into the labors of others, yeah. Right? And that is specifically the labor of God Himself. But we look to the rock whence you're hewn, and to the hole of the pit from whence ye are digged. Now, I think it's interesting, and I'll not go into any detail on this, but I think it's interesting that he put that first, the rock from whence you're hewn, and then from the hole from whence you're digged. But it would do us good. I think it's doing us good if we go back and think about the hole from whence we were digged. We were in a hole. I mean, we were in a hole that was a bottomless pit, right? It was a bottomless pit, and there was no way that we were going to dig ourselves out of it. You know, if you're in a hole and you're digging, what are you doing? Yeah, you're just getting the hole deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, and you're getting further away from getting out of the hole than you were when you began. But look at to the hole of the pit which you're digging. And so I began to go through my own experience the last time we were in this. And I said then that as I go along in this, I hope that some of you, or all of you, or whatever, will also relate your own experiences in this. I know you've had them. I've heard Brother Jerry again talk about his experience and like he said a while ago, as much in that respect, as much like my own. I've heard Brother Bruce talk about his experience, and it's a wonderful thing. I know Joel's some of his experience that especially that took place at and after. Well, some of the sessions at St. Louis at the Bible conference up there. I know JT's experience because he's my brother in the flesh. I've been close to him all my life. So I know that those experiences are there. I've known my wife now for... I started to say nearly 63 years, but if you count all the time that we went together, a year and a half before we got married, it's been over 63 years. In fact, it's been more like 64 years. But I know I've heard Sister Joyce and I've heard Sister Linda talk about things that happened in their own lives. So I know we've got these experiences here, and if the Lord brings it to your mind and puts it on your heart, I want to hear you talk about your experiences. But I know where I came from. Again, I've already related here this morning how that we were in this so-called revival and made a profession of faith. The reason I made that profession of faith is because I didn't want to go to hell. That's a good reason. No, not really. The only reason...
Well, that's what the flesh believes.
That's right. That's right. It's what the flesh believes. But the only reason for being saved is that we might worship and glorify the God of our salvation. But one day God did truly save me. He truly saved me. And yes, from that point on, again, my life was changed. But once again... it wasn't long after I was saved till I started teaching Sunday school, and then taught the Sunday school teachers, assisted the pastor in doing that, was elected to the board of elders, and became the chairman of the board of elders, and worked diligently within the Lutheran Church in all kinds of capacities. Sunday school teacher again, teacher of the Sunday school teachers, elder, and as the chairman of the elders was involved in the building committee and the school, the parochial school that we had, and the finance committee. And then all of these other extra things like the men's club, the choirs, two different choirs, sang in two different choirs, the Lutheran Hour, representatives, Walter Leaguers, my wife and I were sponsors of the young people, and on and on and on it goes until we got a new pastor in there. And he was of the modern version, and he and I became instead of being close like I was with the old pastor B.R., me and the new pastor were more crosswise. But as it happened again, many people were encouraging me to be a pastor in the Lutheran, among the Lutherans. But God would not have that to be, and I understand or understood later why that was. But as a result of all of this, God led us out of the Lutheran church and into the Baptist church. But albeit a Arminian Baptist. Again, you wonder sometimes, well, why did God lead you the way he did? Why all the events in your life? And many of them, you know, you wonder, well, how did that glorify God? And yet, as I look at myself and my experience, through all of this, it taught me a lot of things. In that Arminian church, in Arminian Baptist church, we believed in premillennialism. I was a staunch believer in premillennialism back in those days as anybody I knew, because that's what I was taught. Until God. And that's the key, isn't it? Until God. But there's a lot of things that I learned during that time. Mentioned last time the fallacy of this so-called mother church. Well, the Baptists, most Baptists wouldn't—they deny that they believe in the mother church, but in practice, different thing, because they don't believe that this little group that starts out over here—they're not a church yet until they organize. And, you know, all that kind of business. And then even after they organize sometimes, as JT and I had the experience, again, even after they organize, they're not really recognized as they say being independent. Still tied. There's still a tie there, you know. And it's not a fellowship tie. It's a Lord over you type of tie. But we learn the fallacy of that, and learn the fallacy of premillennialism, fallacy of the modern church organization, the fallacy of the office of the deacon as it's understood today in most Baptist churches. And just, you know, it goes on and on. The understanding of the true understanding of the local church. And then there was this thing of the sovereignty of God. And there again, I mean, JT can relate that to that, but unbeknownst to one another, we were both coming to that same understanding. He was here in the little church that we had helped to establish, and I was in San Antonio, and actually, what happened, JT and Betty were coming over to see us, and I was going to talk to him about this thing of the sovereignty of God. And and already has been experiencing how that, you know, people hated that doctrine, and there was the division there, and we were afraid, my wife and I both, we were afraid that, you know, they were just going to, it's just going to divide us and part us asunder. And lo and behold, it comes over and we get to talking about it, and lo, he'd already, God's already taught him. And so there was a great rejoicing.
The mother church come down and preached to me a week about how big God was.
Yeah.
All the time I'm sitting there thinking that he's definitely sovereign. I don't know how big he is, but he's definitely a sovereign God. So
yeah.
They try it awful hard. I give them credit for that.
Yeah, they tried with him, and then we were out in San Antonio when they brought one of the big guns down from Dallas to straighten me out on that. And we had meetings every night, over two hours long, every night of the week. Brother Barr, I guess I call him Brother Barr. It's just a title, I think. But he came down, and he actually, what happened? I was the church there had actually asked me. The men, at least, had asked me to teach these things. We were having a men's meeting on Sunday afternoons. Had started doing that, and they had actually asked me to teach these things to that men's meeting, or during that men's meeting. And but that didn't last very long, because there was so much opposition to it, and I finally came to the point that I just resigned the church. Well, after I resigned it, the deacon of the church came over and wanted to know that would I debate Brother Barr from Dallas. And he was a preacher that actually I had known since I was about probably 6 years old, 6 or 7 years old. My Aunt Sarah Knox was a member of his church. What little that she went there. But anyway, they want to know if I would debate him. And I told the deacon there, I said, well, I don't believe in debating. And I still don't. But I told him, if you want to do it this way, if you can, you'll give Brother Barr an hour, and then you give me an hour, I'll do it. And so they agreed to that, and but it all really came to naught, because it didn't persuade anybody. One of the lady members of the church came to me afterward, and she said, "You know, I would have a tendency to believe these things, but he said if I followed you, I couldn't follow Brother the deacon." So, you know, that's the way it kind of ended. But anyway, the sovereignty of God, precious, precious. I believe it's the foundation of the whole worship of God in truth and in sincerity and purity. I believe that is it. So, in all of this time that was spent in these other churches, God was bringing me to the place that of better understanding of Him and of His Word. And so we wound up in a little church that was called Sovereign Grace Baptist Church. And there it again is the providence of God. Because when we were in the Armenian church there, we again, we were going to or trying to decide on building a building. We had bought a piece of property, and we wanted to put a building on it, but we weren't sure what to do. And so one of the members of our church there knew of this little church that over in called China Grove on the southeast side of San Antonio there. And so we decided, well, we'd go over there and take a look at their building and see if it would be, you know, accommodate us. And so we go over there, and the first thing that we see up there is a sign that says Sovereign Grace Baptist Church, which at that time didn't mean much to us. But afterward, when we really began to understand these things, and we resigned the church there that we had begun, where are we going to go? The second time in our lives that we were faced with that issue, well, is there a church that really believes the truth? Is there a true church? Again, in the Lutheran church, we were taught that the Lutheran church was the church of Christ. It was the church, the right church, the true church. Well, if it was apostatizing, then what? Where were we going to go? So that's what led us first to this Arminian Baptist. But then when we came to the knowledge of the doctrines of grace, the truth of the sovereignty of God, especially in His salvation, then what? Where are we going to go? Well, again, the Scripture says, upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And so, in the providence of God, we already knew where there was a Sovereign Grace Baptist Church. So we began to attend there, and I preached there and taught in that church. I was not the pastor per se of that church, but they called me an assistant pastor. That's a good title, isn't it? But we did have a Sunday school there, and I taught the Sunday school class, and then I preached on Sunday evenings there. And so all of this again led up to that time. Now, backing up a bit, when I made my profession, or announced my call to preach, shortly after that, God brought upon me a great chastisement. It went on off and on for about 12 years. And He would bring upon me times of tremendous darkness. And for years I didn't understand. Didn't understand what it was all about at all. But it finally made me to understand that what He was doing was sanctifying. He was killing off pride, arrogance, sin. Some of those sins, I actually had to go back and make restitution for them. And once I went through all of that, no more. No more darkness. But God was preparing all of this time. As I look back on it, God was preparing. And then we come to this time when God revealed to me, He impressed upon my heart that He would give me a people. Now, some people, you know, might question that. I mean, it wasn't an audible voice, anything like that, but it was during this great time of chastisement, long towards the end of it. And I'll never forget, I was in the kitchen one day, and I was under tremendous conviction. And I would get to the point where, you know, I didn't want to eat. My wife will testify to you that I became skin and bones. If you want to lose weight, you ladies, if you want to lose weight, get under the conviction of God. And, you know, if you want to fast, don't worry, you'll fast. But it was during one of those times when God had just burdened me down. And I was in the kitchen and my head was hanging down. And God impressed upon me, and it was almost like an audible voice. And that's what it all was. I'll give you a people. And I began to pray about that. And what I expected. Have you ever expected God to do something and it turned out that He didn't really do that the way that you thought He was going, where you were thinking? Well, that's the way it was with me, because I thought, you know, that God was going to add to the church that was already there. And we had a church, and it was, I believe at that point, it was growing in grace. But it was just, even back then, it was just a few of us. I think when I first started, became the pastor of First Baptist Church of Klein, what was there, JT, 30 people there maybe? Something like that. And then it dwindled from there. But I began to pray that God would fulfill His promise, and I never doubted, not one minute did I ever doubt that God would fulfill His promise. And sure enough, there were, as my memory serves me right, there were three different times when the church seemed like it was going to take off and grow. And you know, there would people be coming in, and it just looked like God was fulfilling His promise. And then all of a sudden, they'd be gone. And then one day, what happened? I got a letter. Got a letter from a man in the Philippine Islands. Now, I had gotten letters from others from different countries. I don't know how many times I did that, but there's several times that I got letters from supposedly preachers in foreign nations. But when I would write them back and tell them what we believed, never hear from them again. But this time I wrote back, and lo and behold, here comes another letter. Right back. And expressing the same sentiments, the same beliefs. And so we started this correspondence. And then first thing you know, here comes a letter from another man over there. And then shortly after that, there was a third one. And this went on for, I don't know, 6 or 7 months, I guess. And then one day, here come a letter signed by all three of them. And they were asking me to do something. They were asking me to come over there and conduct a 3-day Bible conference. And my first response, and I really didn't think about it very long, my first response was, no, I'm not coming over, going over there. I've never thought about going to a foreign nation. In fact, I told him I've never even thought much about going out of the state of Texas, much less over there. And so I wrote them, and they immediately sent me another letter and asked me to think about it and pray about it. And so I did. I told him, I said, well, you know, all I can do is pray about it. I don't even know really why I went that far. Because I had never thought about going to a foreign country, and especially to one that I knew absolutely nothing about and knew no one. The only people I knew in that whole nation was those three men, and only then by correspondence, by letters.
Did you ever find out how they got your name to begin with?
Yeah, I knew. I asked them how they got my name, and how they got it was that there was a couple, and I've even forgotten their name. They were in North Carolina, I believe. They collected audio tapes at that time, which was a big thing, you know. They collected from, you know, anybody that would send them audio tapes, they would collect them and send them to places all over the world. And so I got tapes from the conferences that, you know, that we attended, and got tapes from other, you know, other times of preachers and things like that. And as I gathered those together, I would send them over to them. And occasionally, and I never did this very much, but occasionally I would put one of my sermons that had been taped at our church, I'd put that in there. And these men got a hold of that one of those tapes like that. And they in turn wrote the Vereens and got my name from them and my address and everything from them. And that's the way they contacted me. That's the way they found out about it. And I did pray about it. And God laid it upon my heart to go over there. And I told the church what my desires were, and the church gave me their blessings to go. So that's the way this all came about. And again, as I look back, the whole of the pit from which I was digged, it was a deep hole, steeped, first of all, with a lot of error. But believing that was right. How about you? How much of what you once believed do you still believe? Now, again, I, over the years, I caught a lot of flack because I changed what I believed. I know JT did. I know what he went through, trying again to teach people the truth.
May I say something? I believe that what really happened is when we moved to Sound and Tone and you were able to have time to really study the scriptures that you didn't have time before working.
Well, that's true. We started the church over here. I was working full time at Maurice Pentecost Company as the head of their traffic department there. When we moved to San Antonio, I did not have a secular job at that time. So I did have more time to spend in the scriptures, but this was the beginning, I believe, of God fulfilling that promise that He made concerning a people. Now, don't misunderstand me. I already had the beginning of that people. There was a church. As I stated in the beginning of this last time, we were a church and a faithful church, and we were growing. We were growing in grace and knowledge of the Lord Jesus. But just as in my former experience in the Lutheran Church, God was not ready for me. He was not going to allow me to be a preacher, a pastor in the Lutheran Church. One of the providences of God there was simply that the old Lutheran pastor, the one that I loved dearly, I loved that man, old Pastor Carl Behar, the church voted him to leave. And it hurt me. I wept over that. And I couldn't understand it at the time, but later I did understand it, because if he had stayed there, it would have been extremely, extremely difficult for me to leave the Lutheran Church, because I loved him so. But it wasn't so hard with this new man. In fact, I was glad to get out of there. So, God's providence. Again, how does God lead us? Does He always lead us through everything coming up roses? No. He leads us through the valley, doesn't He? The 23rd Psalm was not meant for the dead. The 23rd Psalm was meant for the living. He leads us through the valley of the shadow of death, probably more often than He leads us up on that mountaintop, as it's been come to known. So, here we are. here we were at that particular time. I have agreed to go over there. And again, I've said this many times in the past. I was somewhat like Abram at that time. He went where? He didn't know where he was going. He went not knowing whence he was going. But God did. And I was that same way. I had no clue as to what I was getting into. In fact, I thought, well, it'd be just a one-time trip. You know, I'd go over there and come back, and that'd be the last I'd hear of it. And I think I've related what that beginning of that first trip was. It was a trial, a sore trial in itself. But God again taught me through that. And as bad as the beginning was, it taught me again the power, the necessity, the efficacy of prayer. Because when I got to the point where I did not know what in the world I was going to do, I couldn't even think. I was so tired, so worn out, so physically and mentally and even spiritually worn out that I could not even think. But it finally came to me. What's the answer? Prayer. And when I pray, I don't know, you know, Job talks about the flesh becoming like a little child's, renewing like a little child's. Well, my flesh literally did that. I was no longer tired. My mind was clear. And I went for how long? Another almost 24 hours. Without any sleep, without any rest. And God is able to do things like that. If you trust in Him He's able to renew your strength like what? Like the eagles. You'll run and not be weary. And I've experienced it so many times over there. I was this week. I was reading again some of the I call them diaries that I wrote up during that time, during those trips over there. And as I look back on it again, I'm surprised. I was 56 years old when all of this started. I don't know how I did it, except by the grace of God and the power of God. But I went, and there was supposed to be a man meet me at that airport at Manila. He never showed up. And I don't know to this day what happened to him. But God got me through that. And He got me on from Manila down to Davao City. And you know, after I prayed, you know, everything since then has been no problem, really. It's been amazing, and we'll get into that as we go through this again, how the providence of God has worked in all of this. But it has been the ministry of this church Now, we haven't pursued this, if you will, like most churches, even amongst our own kind, pursue it. How do they pursue it? Well, they've got to have a committee. You always got to have a committee, right? Everything's got to be by committee. And you got to go out, you know, and you've got to solicit, first of all. They've got a word for that. I can't think of it right offhand. Anyway, what they do, they go out to all these other churches and they solicit their
support.
Yeah. And again, there's a term that they use for it. They got a term for everything, though, of course. But that's the way they do it. And if you don't do it that way, then
Is it pledges?
No, that's not the. I can't think of the term that they use. But anyway, it's not really important. But anyway, we didn't do that. No, not sponsorship. So, it amounts to the same thing. But anyway, it'll probably come to me later. But like I say, it's really not important. But the important thing is that we didn't do that. We just took it that God was directing us. We didn't ask for it. I didn't ask to be a missionary. And again, sometimes I don't even like that term. It leads to too many false ideas. But I had never thought about going anywhere again other than our own church. But again, the church gave its blessings, and sometimes I wonder why they did that. Except that, again, I trust that it was a leading of the Lord. But I went over there and made it to Davao City. And one of the first things that happened, we were having a little meal at one of the preacher's house, and there was a few other those Filipino preachers that was there, and we were just sitting around a little room, probably two-thirds of the size of that area that y'all are sitting in right there, and just having a good time of fellowship, if you will. And all of a sudden, one of the men came over to me and said, "We're ready for you to preach." Well, what was I supposed to do?
Preach.
I was supposed to preach. But after, over the years, that has happened multitudes of times. I remember we were at Jinsan General Santo City at a conference there with Brother Arne Gamelion, and I was sitting about where like JT was sitting right there, and Brother Arne was up here, and he all of a sudden he said, "Well, Brother Paul, you're next to preach." I said it took, I had about 8 seconds to come up with a text and something to preach. But see, God's faithful. Then there was the time that we were in Bohol and Dao East there, and they wanted me to see this cave. So we all went down in this cave. There's probably 40 of us down in this cave. There was a little bit, just a bare little bit of light in there, enough that you could kind of see how to get around. But we were, again, just, you know, enjoying the time together. And one of them comes up and says, "We want you to preach." Well, I couldn't even read my Bible. But see, these are some of the things that makes me believe that God is in this. Because he gave me a message. I couldn't read my Bible, so I had to do it by what? By memory. And this is the way that I believe, again, that God really works. We weren't asking. The church wasn't asking. You know, the church wasn't looking to send me out like that. It came as a surprise to all of us. But yet, we answered. And again, as I said, that's not the way that was normally done, and it's still not normally done that way. But one day I was talking with Brother Conrad Merle. And I was talking to him and kind of expressing, you know, a concern about the way this had all come about. And Brother Conrad's remark was, "Well, y'all put the rest of us to shame." And I looked at him. I know I looked at him funny. And I asked him, I said, "Well, you know, Brother Conrad, what do you mean by that?" And that's what he said. He said, "Well, you know, everybody else has to go out and do all these other things before they can go out. But y'all just went out as God led you." And so that was the beginning of this ministry that God has given to you and to me. And again, I just want us to be thankful for it and rejoice in that which God has done and is continuing to do through this little ragtag group of people. We've all had our experiences that are somewhat similar, and yet we've all come from different backgrounds, haven't we? Amen. Every one of us have come from different backgrounds. But in it all, you see, back in eternity, are we still in eternity? We use these expressions, though, don't we? Back before Genesis 1 and 1, by the way, we got a new booklet from Chapel Library talking about the providence of God, and one of the articles in there is by Pink, by A.W. Pink, and he's talking about Genesis 1:1. Yeah, I hope you do. You'll appreciate what he has to say in there. Right. And I guess I lost my train of thought there for a minute, but anyway, yeah, before the world ever began, who knew? God knew.
You might go back to something you mentioned earlier, I think, when we were just talking these billions of years. And so I think the reason people think about that, I mean, it just shows the God cannot be measured.
Right.
You come up with, I mean, they come up with 40 billion light years.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? That doesn't measure God at all. That's a big number, and it's a real number.
Yeah.
But you can't measure him. He's beyond that. And I love to think about that.
Absolutely.
Because he became a man just like we are.
Yes.
I mean, it just, there is no logic to that.
Condescended
to
become a man.
Yeah.
I preached for an hour and a half at Hing Oog Oog, a little place in northern Mindanao up there. I preached for an hour and a half on that very thing. And thought the people were getting tired, and no, they said, go on, go on, go on. So, it's amazing. All right. Number 427. Joel, if you will, dismiss us this morning, or this afternoon now, but break for a brief period of refreshing our bodies, and thanks be to God.